Well, welcome to Track C of Vital Church Planting Conference. This is kind of a new thing we're doing this year, to have a separate track for people who are sort of identifying themselves as people who want to start something new, whether you have an idea of what that's going to be or not. So I'm excited to be with you. I'm going to kind of walk with this track today and tomorrow. Beth Fellinger, who just left the room, is going to lead tomorrow's workshops. But we're hoping that yes, you'll get something out of the workshops, but also just that by being together, those who are looking for a new idea or having a new idea and are looking to see it come to life are just going to get to spend some time in each other's presence, bounce those ideas off each other. Friday afternoon, there's an opportunity to pray together and encourage one another. When people are just going to split up into groups, you can self-identify. We've got one group for people who are looking for vision and an idea, and one group for people who are looking to get something off the ground. So there'll be more chances to kind of fellowship and support each other through that as well. So like I said, we're going to be together for the next 2 days. We also, just this morning, we're talking about how to kind of keep the conversation going. So I have everybody's email address that's in this track. And after the conference, I'm going to email everybody and just send you a link to a Facebook group that we'll set up for people who want to kind of continue the conversation after this. I've already been asked why we don't have a Twitter hashtag for it. I think Twitter's a bit beyond us, but maybe Facebook be a safer place to start. And so I'm going to set that up. I'll email you just an invitation. We're not going to force you onto anything, but it's a way for us to keep going because some people are from different places around the country, different kinds of churches and things like that. My name's Ryan Sim. I should introduce myself. Then I'm going to ask others to quickly introduce themselves. But I'm Ryan Sim. I don't quite know how to introduce myself anymore because I'm kind of between things. I work half-time here at St. Paul's. I've been on staff here for almost 3 years, and one of my main responsibilities was leading a new church plant that we started called Reconnect. It's just gone through a leadership transition. Three Sundays ago was my last Sunday with Reconnect, and Matt Adams, who's also on staff here, is now leading Reconnect. It's a new church we started for people in their 20s and 30s who live right around here, but have never been connected to the Christian faith at all in their lives, or maybe were once as children and have been away for a long time. So I've been part of a church plant here, and before that I had a rural parish in Eastern Ontario in the Diocese of Ontario. Look at you, Christina. My Diocese of Ontario friends are here. And now I'm on my way to Ajax, a suburb just east of Toronto, where I've been asked by the diocese to lead the planting of a new church there. So I'm kind of in between things. I'm in the listening phase of that church plant and the planning phase, which is why it'll be good to work through some of that with you. I'm wondering if we can really quickly just have people introduce yourselves and where you're from. I don't know, maybe it's not cool to talk about denominations, but we will anyways, because so many are Anglican, but many of you also are not. And it's interesting to see the conference over the years develop and welcome people from across the Canadian church. So let me just say who you are, where you're from, and what kind of a church you represent, if any. So can we start here? Once again, postulants beware. The media is here. All right. Well, thanks for telling us where you're coming from. It's actually exciting to hear all the new things that are happening or that are being dreamt of. And it's good to get us all in the same room for at least 3 sessions this week and hopefully beyond that, too. In this particular workshop, I'm going to focus on making a good plan for mission. I'm going to focus on try to take a vision or an idea and figure out how that might actually happen on the ground. And it's important because, you know, we tend to be ideas people. I hearing ideas around the room and visions and hopes and dreams. And we're not always good at actually getting a good plan together, actually mapping out what things are going to look like over time and what's it going to cost, who do we need to have on the team, things like that. So I'm going to look at kind of the big overview of what a plan could look like, how to articulate the very basic steps of a new plan for a new mission. And then Beth is going to focus right in on teams in another workshop, and then on leading teams in the third workshop in this track. That means this is going to be a really practical workshop. I'm going to really rely on Dave Mail, our plenary speaker, to kind of talk about the theology of church planting and Fresh Expressions, and to talk about kind of some of the theory of that, and I'm going to really try to focus in on, okay, what do we actually do? We kind of got the why and the what. We're going to look at the how. I saw this book title and had to read it not that long ago, Making Ideas Happen, and it was totally not geared to you know, church planters or Christians at all. It was really just a marketing book, but it rang true because it talked about how marketing people tend to be idea people and aren't always very good at organizing their thoughts and figuring out how to actually execute them, and they just can kind of flit from idea to idea to idea. And it said a couple of good things. Ideas don't happen because they're great or by accident. Having the idea is just a small part of the process, maybe 1% of the journey. So I'm going to try to look at the next steps in that. And this book kind of brought up four ingredients. It's not a formula where it's like step one, step two, step three, step four, but rather the ingredients that we want to have in terms of making an idea happen. An idea, first of all. I'm assuming you've got one. I'm not going to give you the bang-up idea here or one to copy. It's the last thing I hope you'll do coming out of VCP is walk away with an idea to copy. But rather, I hope you'll be inspired to listen to your neighborhood and then to do something about it. So I'm assuming you have an idea or that you're praying for one and that God will give you one. And then Saturday morning, there's another workshop I'll be part of on missional listening. So if you sort of have a sense that God might be calling you to something and you want to know how do I learn about people, how do I learn about a neighborhood, then we'll be talking about that then. Sometimes we have an idea and we either never imagine it'll actually happen or we get stuck there. I remember in my rural parish in Eastern Ontario, We brought together some really amazing people to form a long-range planning team, and we spent time studying scripture, figuring out what the church was all about, looking at who we were as four discrete church communities, and we started to formulate a vision for being one church together. And it really came together, and this team wrote a great proposal, and they presented it to the congregation. Each of them had a part in presenting it, including this one member who was a real champion, really good speaker, and really championed that vision. And the minute it happened, he kind of withdrew from the parish and started to speak ill of what we'd done, and it was really confusing for me. And I remember going and meeting with him several times, and one time he finally kind of came clean about what was going on, and he said, "You know what? I thought it was a great vision. I just never thought it would actually happen." So there's great safety, right, in having great ideas and talking about them, and then just kind of being a little afraid of what would actually happen if we followed through on them. And sometimes it's just safer to be that person with the idea who's not willing to execute it. But I think God has a heart not just for good ideas, but for actually transforming our world. For actually seeing his kingdom happening, not just talking about it. So I think we're called to do something more. We've definitely got a role to play. I look at what Paul has to say about discipline and spiritual life. And I think it applies in mission. That's Paul's context, is one of mission and planting new churches. And you know, he says, "Do you not know that all in a race all the runners run, but only one receives the prize? So run that you may obtain it. Every athlete exercises self-control in all things. They do it to receive a perishable wealth, but we an imperishable. So I do not run aimlessly. I do not box as one beating the air, but I discipline my body and keep it under control, lest after preaching to others, I myself should be disqualified." So mission is about an idea, but also about organizing and executing it and having a community around us who are part of that. It's hard work. It's going to be hard work, what you're all dreaming of, what you're praying for. There's a great resource that, they're actually selling here at the conference in room 106, called Starting Mission Shaped Churches. And I find it's a great balance because there's a lot of stuff out there on sort of how to plant a church, and it's got the 10 steps you need to follow, and it's really oversimplified. Generally starts with a worship service and just says, you know, rent a school gym, have service, shower the neighborhood with postcards, boom, you've got a church. So there's really formulaic stuff out there. There's also really theoretical stuff out there that just talks in the abstract and it's hard to tell what can actually come of it. And I found this book actually a really good balance between the two. It's a workbook. It's meant to be worked through. There's stuff to do. But it's also rooted in the kind of mission we're talking about here at VCP, the idea of fresh expressions of church being planted, not just copies of the same old. But seeing something new. It comes out of Australia, and it talks about these five T's. Again, it's not a process that you have to follow, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, but rather five ingredients we want to have in a plan. So target, want to know what we're trying to do. Task, how we're going to do it, what steps are involved, a team, some timing, and also some tools, some resources at our disposal. So we're going to look at the five of these through our time together, and then we'll try to apply it to some of our own ideas. Now, you might wonder, you know, is team really step three? Like I said, this isn't a process to follow, but rather a formula, a recipe. So you definitely need a team. Some of these things you might discern and then gather a team around you. Some you might gather a task force, you know, a couple individuals are going to help you with a particular task. But at some point, you're also going to gather a team around you, and Beth's going to get into that. First of all, I'm going to throw this little video up on the screen. It's a news story you may have heard lately about a couple kids near Toronto. All right, I think that's a great story, right? There's a couple high school kids, haven't even finished grade 12 yet, right? And they had an idea. And it took them 2 years, but they made it happen. And you could see the joy in their faces having seen it happen. And I think when we hear stories like this after the fact, we often don't appreciate the planning that goes into it. But there is an awful lot of planning that goes into any good news story, really. And I tried to work through the five T's, you know. What does it look like for these kids? And it's important because, well, one of these kids, the one last name, Ho, he said he was happy they could share these images that came back, but having an idea is one thing, making it work is the hard part. You have to put your ideas into motion and get working, he said. Dream big, you never know what's possible. So first of all, they had a target, right? They wanted to build something that was going to go up into space, take pictures, and bring them back. There's a few parts to the plan, right? We've got to build the thing, we've got to get it up there, we've got to get it back, and still find it. So you can imagine, okay, you know, so we've got a target, pictures from space, and we've got a task. We've got to design, launch, and recover the thing. If any of those is missing, it's not going to work. So starting to break it out into some discrete tasks. Who's the team? Two kids and a Lego man. Very important to have the Lego man. Took them 2 years. I don't know whether they thought it would take a week and it took 2 years or not, but it took them a while because they had other things to do and they weren't getting paid to do this. And in fact, they wanted to do it with minimal tools. They wanted to do it under $500. They did it for about $400, most of it, I think, helium. And they tried to make as much as they could all on their own. The only thing they bought was the helium balloon and the helium. Everything else they made themselves, other than, you know, digital cameras. They bought those off eBay used. So a lot of creativity there, kind of, and it's a beautiful thing when it's done, but I think it's also beautiful as the plan comes together. If we were going to combine those five T's into just one paragraph, we could say, you know, our mission is to take photos from space by designing and launching a weather balloon and recovering it, I should add, as a team of three, two guys and a Lego man with just $500. It's important to have something like that. Maybe you've heard the term of an elevator speech before. The idea is you find yourself in the elevator with the boss. You have a great idea. How are you going to pitch it before the elevator door opens and the boss gets off? So that's my hope, is that coming out of today, if you've got an idea, you'll at least be able to articulate in a quick little elevator speech, quick little paragraph, what it is you're dreaming of, what kind of an idea God has given you, and what it might take to actually make it happen. So when you find yourself in the elevator with that bishop, or you discover that there's grant funding available and you want to ask for it, or you meet somebody who might be part of the team, or you meet somebody who might want to be part of what you're starting, you've kind of got a sense of how to communicate, not just the idea, but how we might actually get there. So in terms of churches and starting new missional kind of projects in our neighborhoods, we want to think first about that target. What are we trying to do here? We're not always clear about that, right? We can be really fuzzy. Churches try to do a lot of things, and we're kind of used to, well, we're just doing what we've always done. But with a church plant or a new project, we want to be really clear about what is it we're trying to do. Why is this worth the time, the money, the resources that are going to go into it? Why is it worth somebody else's participation? It's new and it's exciting, so we can get caught up in excitement. But we want to be clear on what we're trying to do. Now, maybe you don't like the metaphor. Target makes it sound like you're going to shoot the people. Think more in terms of a landing target. When these kids wanted to launch their weather balloon, they had to run a few scenarios on different days. So, you know, if we launch it today and they run this through the computer, it's probably going to land in the U.S. and Homeland Security might not be very happy with us. So they had to wait for that right moment to send it up when they knew it would land in the right place. They wanted it to land in Canada within an easy drive so they could pick the thing up. In the same way, I think we can think about church that way. We can think about the kingdom of God. Jesus has landed here. Where have we yet to land with him? We know Christ has come incarnate on this earth, and the kingdom is inaugurated and growing. And he sent the church to follow in his footsteps. And there are certainly places in our world where we haven't quite followed in his footsteps yet. There are people groups, there are neighborhoods, there are cities, countries, the list could go on, of networks and geographies that the church needs to land in. The vision in Acts at Pentecost is certainly that this church is for everywhere and everyone. We see that in the languages being spoken, in Jesus' words in the Great Commission. We see it in the way Peter speaks, beyond the usual barriers between people groups. We see that this gospel is for every people group. We know it isn't true yet, but there is that potential. There's loads of potential. And I think as we try to discern our targets, sometimes we already know deep within our hearts. We may be hiding from it. We may be running from it, Jonah style. But there may be a group already laid on our hearts. Maybe it's been years that we've been wondering, why isn't that group part of our church? Why is that part of the city so underserved? Why are there so many needs among that people group that the church isn't serving? We're looking kind of for gaps. We're looking for who's missing from church, what neighborhood, what people group, what age group, what language group, what socioeconomic group, who's missing from your church or just the church in general. Well, certainly the case with Reconnect, the church plant that's here on Sunday nights. I've known for a long time that there aren't a whole lot of Christians my age. And I've long had a sense that the people I know and meet outside of church land are not followers of Jesus. And I've just long been challenged by that. Why is that? Why isn't it different? How can I do something to be part of God's plan to reach every people group of every age? I don't think we can just trust that this whole generation is going to come back someday when they have kids and want them baptized. I think they need to know the gospel now. And so that that sense of me just looking around me and seeing all these people who are not followers of Jesus, looking at the churches I was part of and never seeing anyone in my age group, certainly meant that I had a passion for that. I could see, you know, if we look at an overhead view of God's world, there were definite landing places that the church needs to be, should be, is called to be, sent to be, but isn't right now. As I move into a new demographic, having a son now, we're one of those young professional commuting families that are all over the town of Ajax, just east of Toronto, and that's now what I'm moving into. Again, I'm looking at a geography in this case, Ajax, a town of 107,000, with one Anglican church at the very edge of town, and no Anglican church at its core. A number of churches concentrated in certain areas, but then huge swaths of land with no churches in them. And more importantly, a whole demographic with very little church attendance, and that's the young professional commuting families who find themselves commuting long, long hours. They leave on the GO train or by car early in the morning. They get back late at night. They see their kids for maybe an hour. Dinner might even be over. I know a couple people who almost do shift work at home. One's there in the morning, one's there in the evening, and then the kids are in bed. Kind of people who look at Sunday morning church and they say, why on earth would I get up and go somewhere where my kid has to go to Sunday school when that's our only day together as a family? And we think church is a family activity, right? Family values. There's a gap there. There's a whole people group who don't perceive church the way maybe we do, having a lot more experience around there. So once again, I'm looking, whether it's geographically or a people group, there are all sorts of these landing places where the kingdom of God has begun and where we're invited to be a part of it. I can't tell you what that target's going to be. Like I said, I sure hope you've got one in mind or you're praying for one. But once you have that, the next task is to really understand who they are. I remember, you know, my rural parish in Eastern Ontario, I remember us talking about them, you know, those other people who don't come to church. And I remember sitting through many meetings where people would talk about them and say, oh, they don't come to church today because they're not coming to this activity because they don't support this because. And I, after a while, eventually asked, well, how do we know that? Well, I don't know. I don't know. I just always figured that was the case. Well, why don't we ask them? And so we started asking people why they did this or didn't do this. What's your life like? What's your day-to-day life like? Where do you spend time? Where do you meet people? Tell me about your week. What do you do in a week? We go ask questions like that, and we learned a lot about people. So listening and learning is really critical, not just to define the target, but then to spend time learning about it and just becoming part of that community. I'm about to do that, moving to Ajax sometime in the next 3 months because I've kind of done all the listening I can from afar, and the time has come to just become part of a community, to move into a neighborhood and start meeting people who have nothing to do with the church, who have maybe never been exposed to the Christian faith. That's the next step, and we're not planning to do anything public, like a worship service, for at least a year, in order to just become part of a community and to just start building some community and the kind of community where there's potential for some discipleship to happen, where people actually talk about real life and issues that matter, and where the gospel actually has good news to bear on those situations. So there's a lot of listening to be done. Like I said, Saturday morning there's a workshop devoted to that. So I'm not gonna give it all away in hopes that you will come Sunday morning or Saturday morning. But just in terms of what that looks like, you want to look at some demographics. I've done some full-out demographic studies, but you can also just get some free demographic data from realtors, from websites, from Statistics Canada. Just want to kind of understand the makeup of a community, who's there, and you can begin to discern some needs and some aspects of the community from that. Spend some time there as part of the community. And when I say there, I don't just mean geographically where, you know, you have to go somewhere. It might just be in your neighborhood. I spent a whole week where I forced myself not to come into this building, and I basically lived at Starbucks. And I know it's a rough life. But just trying to be part of the community around us here, because these big stone walls can really insulate us from the world around. So spend some time immersed in the community, just listening and learning. Ask people things. Turn to the person next to you at Starbucks. Ask a little bit about who they are, what brings them here, what are they working on. A lot of people work at Starbucks. Watch and listen and learn. So that's really important. Come out Saturday morning. The next thing we need to talk about, though, is the task. We may have a target. Okay, we want to connect with young professional commuting families in Ajax, 85% of the population in Ajax. That's a big goal. What does that actually look like? So we need to define what's going to actually get us there. And I'm a big fan of the formative journey of Fresh Expressions. I think you're going to hear Dave talk about it a few times. And we kind of modeled this year's conference after it. These 4 points of listening, serving, relating, and discipling. And I'm a big fan of that. I really took it to heart when we started Reconnect here, because our temptation, I think, was to start with very churchy answers to very real problems in people's lives. And you know, I had a few ideas. I thought, well, maybe we'll do a Christian basics course in a pub, or something like that. Maybe we'll do that. We'll just take it to a different place. And the more I explored that kind of idea, the more I realized that there was sort of a, I call it the ecclesiastical bandwagon. There's a certain set of Christians who go from thing to thing in this city looking for that kind of explicitly Christian course. And when it's held in a fun new venue, that's just a whole new place to experiment. I realized that's going to attract Christians. If you have a Christian basics course, it attracts those who are Christian or who are really serious about exploring spirituality. And I thought, no, there's got to be something for those who aren't even thinking about spirituality. How do we connect with people who wouldn't dream of coming to a Christian basics course, much less a church service? And tried to constantly keep us at the level of how do we just start by serving some real needs. And I say real needs because we had to listen to know what those needs were. So how do we start by just actually helping people with the problems they think they have rather than the problems we think they have? And trying to find solutions that are shaped to serve those needs rather than shaped to either serve our needs or just to kind of do what we know how to do or think would be a good idea. We're kind of constantly reminding ourselves not to get too churchy too quickly, not to start with worship, not to start with explicit discipleship, but rather to start serving some needs in a way that would build community, where people would encounter the same people over and over again, some of them followers of Jesus, who will hopefully be apparent in that, and where that community that forms around those served needs leads to real conversations about real things that matter that lead to discipleship, and where disciples eventually say, hey, we should really worship. That'd be a good thing to do. I've been reading in the Bible about this whole worship thing. Why don't we do that? Now that we're disciples. That's kind of the process we had in mind. And so we really intentionally spent time listening, like I said, and then thinking about, okay, what needs are arising in this community? So I looked at young professionals who live around St. Paul's here for Reconnect. It's tough, right? You think about serving needs. It's not easy to do in a community that doesn't appear to have any needs. Trust me, it's just an appearance. There's the appearance of affluence, there's the appearance of having it all together because of education or because of a kind of career, but once you really get to know people, you realize they're as broken as anyone else. So it's a matter of figuring out what those needs were when people are really good at hiding them, and thinking, well, how can we actually help? How can we actually help in a way that can lead to community and discipleship? Very few young professionals in this community are looking for something to do Sunday mornings. The kind of things they were up to Saturday night preclude that. They're just not waking up early on a Sunday morning, unless they've already reprioritized their lives because of Jesus, right? But since that's intentionally who we wanted to meet, those who didn't know much about Jesus, much less wanting to reprioritize their lives around him and his kingdom, we had to really think, well, what does it look like? The more I listened, the more I learned, the more I gathered people around me to be part of that listening and learning process, the more we realized that there was a consistent thread through all our interactions with young professionals in this neighborhood. Stress. People are busy. They're trying to establish their careers. They're trying to pay off that student debt. They're trying to hold it all together while away from family. And things are starting to crack. They're working long hours. I'd watch people, you know, rushing home from the subway late at night, carrying a bag of takeout in one hand and an LCBO, it's a liquor store bottle, in the other hand. Thinking, wow, you got a date. and takeout, you know, classy. But that just gave me a sense of people wanting more for their lives, people wanting to have a certain lifestyle, but finding it was an afterthought, finding that they had little time to take care of themselves and eat healthy, much less entertain their date. There was just this sense of busyness and stress impacting their quality of life. We saw that with the number of times I saw the Swiss Chalet delivery guy out in this neighborhood. I realized, okay, again, food is a need here. Good, healthy food that really nourishes people. And food has a real place in God's kingdom too, right? So we started to think about how to help people with that. Well, how do you help people who don't have enough time? Probably not with an event that they need to attend once a week for X number of weeks or the rest of their lives. It's probably not the first thing they're going to identify as being help in their situation. They want to reprioritize, they don't know how, and so adding a two-hour commitment every week doesn't sound like good news. So you start to think, how do we make time for people who have no time? And we thought about this food thing and realized, well, if we could help people prepare good, healthy meals more quickly, say if in an hour and a half you could prepare meals for the week to take home and freeze, we're helping people make time. We're helping people lower their stress levels. Maybe then they'll have some time to explore spirituality. Maybe then they'll have some time to explore what it means to follow Jesus. Maybe then they'll ask some questions of, why would you want to help me eat healthy? We realized this was a way in to serve some needs where real community could be developed and discipleship might someday happen. I remember gathering a team of people together around me to help with that. We had a think tank where we gathered four groups of people, young professionals who were part of this church. So still not quite where we wanted to land in the neighborhood, but close to it. Culturally similar enough, but still followers of Jesus, and so just a little off, right? So just like John Bowen's book, Evangelism for Normal People, right? Want to remember that we're not really normal as Christians, and that's kind of the point. So young professionals who are part of our church, we gathered them together. Talk about who you are and who your friends, neighbors are. We also talked to condo residents, people who live in the area. They might not be young professionals, but they live among them. And so we gathered them. We gathered some strategic thinkers, just people who we knew as part of this church, who just like to think about a strategy like this, like to think about a plan and how we'll make it happen. And just those who were interested in what was going on as part of what was once called the Route 1-8 Project, eventually became known as Reconnect. So we gathered all these people together, and we shared a lot of the learnings from just spending time in the community, reading demographics, talking to people, doing surveys and interviews, and basically put it all out there. Here are the trends we're seeing. Here's what we want to do, serve needs, build community, make disciples. What might that look like? And we got people in these groups of diverse people trying to figure out what that would look like. And that's where leaders started to emerge. That's where, you know, okay, we had this idea for food. Wow, there are two chefs here. Maybe God's trying to tell us something. We started to have an idea that involved music. Wow, we have a musician here. Ideas that involve photography. There's a photographer. And I know another photographer we could bring in. And a team started to develop from that task force that had come together. And I use task force carefully to say, you don't need to start with a standing committee of people who are committed to a project and who you've committed to being part of that project. But gather people around you. Don't do this alone. Try to gather people around you for specific tasks that need to happen, that need community around them. And from that, a team who are going to actually implement this might emerge. It's one way. There are many, many ways to gather a team. It's the way we did it at Reconnect. And I know Beth probably had a different way of gathering a team. And you've probably had some experiences too. So there's a lot of good stuff out there. But this was a very fruitful process for us. The other way we gathered a team for a specific project was when the time came for Reconnect to start a Sunday evening community, something you all would probably recognize as church service, but was really meant for people who were repelled by that kind of idea. When we wanted to gather a team to lead that, we took a similar approach of gathering our team. We did an online survey of members of this church who were young professionals, and we said, give this to your friends, neighbors, family as well. Get them to take this online survey. And so we were hoping it would kind of grow from there, and we get actual, honest-to-goodness, unchurched people telling us what they really thought of church and different ideas of what church meant and could be. So we did this survey, and at the end, we asked, at the end of every survey I do, you know, if we start something like this, would you like to know? That's how we build up a mailing list. And then if something like this is going to happen, would you like to be a part of making it happen? And so we got a list of names, about 60 names in the end, who we wanted to invite to be part of starting something new. Gathered them together for a barbecue, shared with them a vision for what this could be, what being on this team might mean, and we had about 30 who were ready to commit to that, and we went from there. So different ways to gather a team. We tried too as Reconnect, and I'm about to try a new experience of going into a community, parachuting in, and building a team just on the ground where there is no Christian presence. That kind of team is one kind of team. I think the other team that a leader needs to have around them is an oversight team. And at least in the Anglican context, that looks like having Episcopal oversight. I work directly with a bishop to plant a church right now. And certainly in our ecclesiology, that's important. Bishops have this apostolic succession, and apostles are church planters. And so it just seems so appropriate to me to be involved in planting a church along with a bishop and all that means in our ecclesiology. But I think you also need to have some financial oversight, especially if you're starting something new. You've got to figure out a way that you don't need to handle the money as a leader. I think that's pretty important. Church planters can get into a lot of trouble, either perceived or real, when it comes to money. And so as somebody parachuting into a situation, starting something new and hoping to develop a team there, I can't handle the money. So in my case, the diocese is handling the money for us. In hopes that someday we'll have a team who can constitute an appropriate governance structure to look after money ourselves. But something to think through as you develop the five T's is who's going to look after the money, who has the appropriate accounting structures to do that when nothing really exists yet on the ground, when you don't have a charitable number, when you don't have a building, when you don't have an office, when you don't have a team. What does that look like? So financial oversight is important. Some pastoral oversight. This sometimes looks like a spiritual advisor, director, mentor, coach, but somebody who's walking with you as you try to move from idea to reality. You've got to have somebody who's walking with you, asking some hard questions about you as a person. Not much to do with the actual process of planting. They may know nothing about it, but it should be somebody who knows something about Christians and nurturing Christians as they try to serve others. And finally, some strategic oversight I found particularly fruitful too. I work with a coach, a church planting coach, somebody who asks me the hard questions about what I'm actually doing. This is the team I have around me. Even though it might look like my family is moving to a community alone, we've got a team of people working with us to provide us with those four kinds of oversight. And we've got a team of people we're developing on the ground in Ajax. And those are both important. So don't forget, as you get thinking about a team on the ground to do the actual ministry, don't forget about the team that's behind your team. Keeping you accountable and sane. Timing is another important aspect of putting a plan like this together. There's a timing to everything. You can see that in Jesus's ministry. He's very intentional about his timing of things. Don't tell anyone that I healed this person. Those kinds of things. And people always ask me why. Why would Jesus say, don't tell anyone? Why doesn't Jesus just come out and say, oh, by the way, I'm God in the flesh? Because he seems to have a plan. He seems to have some timing. I'm going to get to Jerusalem at a certain time. That's when they'll figure out I claim to be God in the flesh, and they can kill me then. Seems to have a plan. There's no other real explanation for why he seems to hold off. But there's certain things that need to get done in order for that to bear the fruit that Jesus seems to have in mind. So we want to have a sense of timing, of what things need to happen, need to be in place before certain things happen, particularly public worship. As I tell people I'm planting a church, they very often say, well, where and when? When's the service? I'll come sometime and support you. And I think... I'm really intentional in the timing. I said, that's actually the last thing we're going to do. There's a whole lot that has to go into this plan before that. And I can share those things with them. And it's exciting to do that because it really expands people's view of church. We're not too worried about where. The diocese owns land if we want to use it someday, but that's a long way out. Where? People's hearts. That's where the real work is going to happen. When? Well, right now, church is going to start. Someday there may be a public worship service, and they may need a space for that, maybe even their own space. They'll own someday with a pointy steeple. Maybe. But that wouldn't make it church. What would make it church is that people would be learning to follow Jesus together, doing that as a community. It's probably not the official definition, but it works. So we want to have a sense of timing. What does it take to get to disciple-making and disciples being the church, with all that that means, including public worship? It can start out very general. I've got a very general timeline in mind right now for what we're doing in Ajax. I'm not too specific. Some people wanted months and things like that, so we've got some, but it's a very loose kind of general sense of where we might go, so we could build a budget off of that too. Just got to have a sense of what might happen, and that can get more detailed as time goes on, as you work out the specific steps that need to get done. And as you're trying to think of a plan, just assume it's going to work. There is a Holy Spirit. Just assume it'll work. And sometimes things don't. Sometimes things die. There are all these statistics on small businesses that fail, statistics on churches that fail too. It can happen. But as you're writing a plan, it's best to assume there will be growth, there will be disciples made. This is a genuine response to what God is doing in the world, and we've been faithful in trying to discern and follow that. For the Ajax project, our our very general outline looks like 6 months of just research. That's what I'm in the middle of right now. I've got 3 months left to go, just learning about the community. Wanted to know some things before we moved there. What neighborhood makes the most sense? Is actually going to fly? Is this the right community for these particular individuals to plant a church in? We needed to know that. And so we had some time to do that, thankfully, some research time while I've been half-time. In May, a new process begins of just being on the ground, living in a new town, meeting people, getting out in the neighborhood and building some community with the people and building a team. That's what we'll be doing for about a year and a half. It might seem like a long time, but I think it's going to go by pretty fast, and we'll still probably not feel quite ready. but that's important because we're wanting to truly see new disciples, and I'm not saying that only takes a year and a half, it takes a lifetime, but we're truly wanting to see a new church arise here. We're not intentionally taking people from other churches and trying to attract them to our new and improved church. We're not trying to take teams from existing churches to start something new. We're really looking at developing something from the ground up. So that's why it takes so long. About a year in, we'd hope to launch something public. Those who've been asking me when and where, that's when I might finally be able to tell you we have something you can come to. up to then, it's just going to be organic growth, some small groups meeting together to study the Bible, people starting to serve their neighbors, starting to build some community as they do, and discipleship conversations starting to happen in those small groups. That's all we're looking at. And by then, we'd hope to be launching something public that you could call worship. And there's another 2 years built into our project just to develop that, to get that off the ground. We're not expecting envelopes to be coming in from day one, paying for the whole thing. There's a sense of timing for how long it might take, thinking that that at the other end we want to be sustainable in some way, which I'll talk about in a moment. Christine. That's the length of time for each project, each phase, we call it. Yeah, it was kind of confusing. This is a different take on it that some of my timing was based off of. These are called missional waymarks. It's something that Duke Vipperman put together. He's going to be presenting it to the bishops and diocesan executives track later in the conference. So you won't be the only one to hear about this. But it's basically an attempt to move beyond the idea of benchmarks. When I first got involved in Reconnect here, there was already a project underway called Route 18 that we hoped would develop into a church plant, a fresh expression. And the Route 18 project had been set up and funded based on certain benchmarks. And there was a lot of concern that maybe that wasn't quite the right language. Benchmarks are about comparing one thing with another. There's a benchmark, and you either exceeded it or fell short of it. They're by nature comparative. And benchmarks invariably ended up being tied to numbers of people and amount of money coming in. And we managed to meet those benchmarks, but we always just kind of knew that it wasn't really what our community was about. It didn't really fit our mission, which was making disciples. We wanted to be measuring other things like transformation in people's lives. Were new people learning what it meant to follow Jesus, and were they coming more than once for that kind of thing? Were new people coming and coming back? So we developed a whole other list of metrics that we measured at Reconnect of who is getting involved rather than just how many were getting involved. We wanted to really notice who. Had they been part of churches before? Were they completely new to exploring what it would mean to follow Jesus? Were people coming back? How many times? What was happening to them? Were they getting involved in small groups? That was the kind of thing we wanted to really pay attention to. So Duke very helpfully developed a document that I'm going to put on my blog. I had the URL up there earlier, but I'll put it up at the end. And I'll put it up there so you can check it out. It very helpfully lays out some phases that are more like waymarks, because waymarks, if you have a GPS and you've ever been into like geocaching, Waymarks are just points you want to pass along the journey. Your path may be very meandering. It may go all over the place. You may get turned around, but there are certain points that you want to just kind of tag as you go by. And the first phase is one of listening. 6 to 9 months is what Duke was suggesting. Phase two is starting relationships. Starting relationships, right? Just kind of figuring out, what kind of people might be on the team. What kind of people might be involved in this? And going deeper into those relationships through that time. 6 months to a year. Phase three, developing a spiritual community. So now taking those relationships, going deeper with them, exploring what it would mean to follow Jesus with people who never have. 9 months, 3 years maybe. Phase four, building Christian community and worship. That takes a long time. And then finally, reproducing Christian community is something to look at beyond. Duke lays out in great detail in that document just kind of what questions might be asked of a new project at each of those phases. Who are you meeting? What are you talking about? Much better questions than how many people came. And how much did they give? So I'd encourage you to check that out. It's a really healthy way to kind of map out what the timing could look like for a new missional project that keeps you focused on the disciple making rather than the attracting of because if you're trying to measure how many people came and how much they gave, then it's really tempting to just rush right into something.